you for tuning in to the Epiphany program on Holy Family Radio with your host, Deacon Louis Zemlich. I'm your program producer, Luke Zemlich. On Epiphany, our goal is to have a moment, an epiphany that will bring us all closer to God. So stick around to have an epiphany with us.
Hello, everyone. This is Deacon Louis Zemlich, and you're listening to the Epiphany Radio Program on Holy Family Radio, Kalamazoo and Grand Rapids area, all of southwestern Michigan. Today, we have a couple of great special guests with us, Jane and Ellen Knuth. They have written 3 books so far, and Thrift Store Saints was the first one, correct, Jane?
Yes.
And also Graces, and this newest one, which is Love Will Steer Me True. So welcome, Jane.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
And Ellen, welcome.
Thanks very much.
And this is a mother and daughter team, correct?
Yes.
Indeed.
Okay, awesome. And we're going to kind of start out like we do with most of our programs that, and of course, this is a local program. These are local people. You're both from Kalamazoo, right?
Yes.
Grew up in Kalamazoo. And so this is kind of a neat thing where, you know, a couple of people have written 3 books, which is really great. And I think most everyone knows about Thrift Store Saints, but not so much about the other two. And, of course, this newest one people might not know anything about, but I just want to remind all of our listeners as well, and if you're ever interested and you'd like to do a show on Holy Family Radio, you've got a ministry or you've got a project or you've got something you're working on, please contact the radio station or contact Luke Zemlich at the radio station, and we can get you in the rotation and hopefully get you on the radio, or if you've got something special going on at your parish. So we really encourage that. This is local Catholic radio. We really encourage you to tell your pastors of your parishes to please support Holy Family Radio, that this is real local programming, real Catholic radio, and it's important for us to support that so that we can keep the lights on, so that we can pay the bills. So we're going to start out, as we do with most of our programs, with kind of a little story. So Jane, can you tell us a little bit about yourself? You can go as far back as you want. Maybe just 5 or 10 minutes, a little caption on yourself so that our listeners can get to know you.
Okay. My name's Jane. I'm from Kalamazoo, born and raised in Kalamazoo. And okay. I've been a volunteer at St. Vincent de Paul Thrift Store in Kalamazoo for almost 20 years. And the stories that came to me there, that the people gave to me, the people that we were supposedly helping, these beautiful stories that I compiled into a book in 2010 are what's kind of been leading me for the last 4 years.
Awesome.
It's just, I'm just following these stories as people pass them around and respond to them. And it's been joy just to be able to share other people's excitement and appreciation.
That's great. Now, what parish do you go to? Any particular parish that you call home in Kalamazoo?
I belong to St. Joseph's Parish with Father Mike Hazard.
Okay.
And I live closer to St. Catherine's Parish, so you'll see me there often because I'm just always in there.
So between the two of them, that's where you go. Okay.
Yeah, but the thrift store is with St. Augustine.
Very good.
So I'm this universal type of Catholic that people talk about.
That's good, though. There's nothing wrong with that. Nothing wrong with visiting other parishes and spreading yourself around and doing that type of thing. So anything else you want to share with us? How many children do you have in your family? I know we have at least one with Ellen.
Proof. My husband, Dean, and I have 2 daughters, Ellen and Martha.
Wonderful.
And, Ellen lives in the Detroit area now, having returned from Japan. And Martha lives in Kalamazoo.
Awesome. Very good. Is that pretty much it, what you're going to share on that?
Yeah.
Okay. Very good. Now, Ellen.
That's me.
Okay. Now, you're the younger version of your mom. So.
To a certain extent, good healthy dose of my dad's humor in there,
okay.
I suppose.
Very good.
But I'm the oldest
okay.
of the two of us.
All right.
And born in Kalamazoo, raised in Portage, came up through St. Monica Elementary and Hackett Catholic Central.
Hey, shout out there.
There you go.
All right.
Though I think they changed their name recently.
Yes.
Hackett Prep?
Hackett Catholic Prep.
All right.
I believe that's the new name.
Well, Fighting Irish.
There you go. That's right.
Gotta be proud.
Amen.
I graduated from Western Michigan University, and graduating in 2008, as the economy face-planted into the ground, I was stuck looking for a job, but luckily, I spoke Japanese, thanks to the international education Western gave me.
Awesome.
So I got a job in Japan teaching English at the public schools in a very small fishing village, and I moved there and stayed over there for about half a decade, which really provided lots of adventures for my family on both sides of the ocean.
Wonderful.
And I've recently returned. I now live, as my mom mentioned, in the Detroit area, just north of Detroit in Clinton Township.
Very good.
And I work for a study and intern abroad company. I work in the university relations. So I travel all around the United States to hopefully get other young people overseas, either in a study or work capacity.
Wonderful. So, you know, we had another mother-daughter team in here before, too, that did some relief to, I'm going to draw a blank on where that was, but it's very interesting, this the dynamic, and we're going to get into a story that you got, too, from a storm that happened over there, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, so we'll talk about that. We'll talk about that a little bit later on in the show. So stay tuned for that, because that's very interesting and pretty amazing, based on prayer and how we feel and things like that. But we're going to get started right into about the books. How would that be?
Sounds good to me.
Great. Okay, great. So the first book was this, The Thrift Store Saints, which was done when, Jane?
2010.
Okay, so that was 2010, and this book is still available, makes a great gift. Anything that you'd like to mention about this book? Anything special about this book you'd like to mention? We'll go through all three of them.
It's a gift book, definitely. I have a lot of people say, could you sign this for my sister-in-law? Could you sign this for my mother-in-law or my brother?
Absolutely.
I just read a review, and it was very interesting on Goodreads of the book, and the reviewer said, I don't read religious work. I don't like books like this, but I finished it, and chapter 3 is worth it.
Wow.
And I thought, wow.
That is great.
That's a great review.
Yeah.
I really appreciated his honesty and that he would recommend it. He would bother to write a review.
Yeah, a street theologian. Is that what he's talking about, chapter 3?
Yeah. Yeah. And that's the story that made me write the book. I mean, I was a math teacher. I wasn't a writer. And when that happened to me and I told people about it over and over again,
right,
they would say, you should write that down. You should write that down. And I was like, well, I don't know how to write, but...
Yeah,
I had to learn.
Yeah, there's a certain part of this chapter 3 that intrigues me as well. Yes, it's very good. Very good. Anything else about the book you'd like to add on? Or
No.
Okay. What about you, Ellen? Any thoughts on the book?
Well, I make a cameo in Thrift Store Saints as a 10-year-old.
Okay, and, very good.
It was published while I was overseas, and my mom sent me a copy, and I read it, and I think she was a little disappointed in that I didn't have any great revelations, but I grew up with these stories around the dinner table.
Yeah.
So for me, my mom writes exactly how she talks. And so it really, I could hear her voice in my head when I was reading it.
That's kind of nice, though.
I just kind of was picturing the original tellings. And so it was perhaps a bit underwhelming for her when I was like, oh, yeah, it's a great, great book, but I heard all those stories before, which was nice when the second book came out. I was still in Japan at the time when Thrift Store Graces was released, but quite a lot of those stories had happened while I was still overseas, and so I hadn't heard those.
Okay, very
so
good.
That was a great way to catch up with my family.
Wonderful. And so the second book is this Thrift Store Graces, which was, when did this come out, Jane?
2012.
This came out just two years after the other one. So tell us a little bit about this and how, you know, the revelation of this and how this goes with the other one.
Well, the first one, Thrift Store Saints, was the people that I met that really taught me lessons about myself, about religion, about God. And the Thrift Store Graces was the stories where I wasn't sure what I was supposed to learn from that.
Okay.
Because that's part of life, too, is that you learn lessons, but there's some things that happen that it's like, what was that about?
Yeah.
And so Thrift Store Grace, is the subtitle is Finding God's Gifts in the Midst of the Mess. There's always a mess at a thrift store, and there's always mess when there's conflict and things.
Right.
And so this one is a little messier. It also tells the story of my trip to Medjugorje when I went on a pilgrimage there. And
okay.
So that's kind of interwoven with the messy stories in
yeah.
the thrift store. And it's a different kind of book than Thrift Store Saints. It's a kind of a sequel, but not really.
So can you tell us kind of a segue onto this trip to Medjugorje, too? Can you tell us what inspired that?
To go to Medjugorje?
Yeah, to go to Medjugorje.
I had an acquaintance at church
okay.
who said, you should go to Medjugorje. And I was like, yeah, well,
okay.
I don't really, I believe that she's appearing. That's fine.
Yeah.
But I don't really need to go because I don't need to prove to myself that she's there. But
correct.
And then this friend kept just kind of every once in a while, every month or so, she would say, are you going to think about going to Medjugorje? You should go to Medjugorje.
Right.
And I'm going, no, I'm not thinking about it. No, that's fine. I've got young children.
Yes.
There's a war going on.
Yes.
It was at the time when things were still pretty hot over there.
Right.
And then, you're going to like this, that our taxes came back, and we got exactly the amount I needed for this trip to Medjugorje. I mean, to the dollar.
I wonder how that happened.
Now, does God work that way? I don't
yeah.
know. But anyway, I said to my husband.
He does have a sense of humor, so,
yeah.
you know, it could be.
Yeah, I said to my husband, who's Lutheran, I said, you know, I mean, I know we don't have any money for me to go to Medjugorje, and I don't know if I should go there, but this is funny. It's the same amount of money to go. And he says, well, if you really want to go, go. We don't have to spend that money on anything else. And I was like, really?
Wow.
And all of our friends thought I was absolutely crazy, and they really admonished him about letting his wife go. When we were there, they started bombing Kosovo.
Oh,
and
wow.
the helicopters were going over the top
wow.
of Medjugorje on their way to Kosovo.
We actually sat with my dad and watched the news, and he said, yeah, that's where Mom is. And I'm like, oh, great.
So was it kind of scary there? Or
it
at
was
that
not.
Time?
It
no?
was
okay,
not
good.
Scary because Medjugorje is not a scary place. Everybody
Amen.
Is at peace there.
Yeah.
Everybody is praying. Everybody, nobody's worried as far as I could tell.
So did you have devotion to the Blessed Mother before then?
Well, I talked to her a lot because
sure.
she seems to have a good hold on what women go through in life.
Amen.
And so we would often be prayer partners, and I would be telling
okay.
her that, you know, some of the problems that I was going through.
Yeah.
But I was not like, you know, I didn't go on pilgrimages before that.
Right.
So that was the first time for me. And Medjugorje taught me a lot. It taught me about what life could be on this earth. It taught me what people could do in the midst of conflicts and messes.
Yeah.
How they can get along, how people can love each other, that different kinds of Christians can love each other and Christians and Muslims
Amen.
Can love each
Amen.
Other. And it taught me that there is no reason to despair. That
Amen.
In the midst of the worst, you
and
can
that, and,
really...
And, you know, that's really the message of any loving mother, right?
Absolutely.
I mean, it's all going to work out. It's going to be okay. God's going to take care of us. And Mary, really, for us Catholics, she's like the ultimate prayer partner,
mm-hmm.
you know. And she is, you know, a human being. She was chosen by God. So she's important. She plays a huge role in our lives and in our salvation. And to ignore that is to ignore reality. The reality that Jesus came out of her. God put Jesus in her, and Jesus came out of her. And so I ask our listeners, you know, think about that. If you don't have any devotion to the Blessed Mother, you've never thought about it. And I actually talked to a couple of people about this, a couple of mothers, a mother and a daughter, similar to the situation. And I also have my picture of Our Lady of Czechohova in front of me here at the radio station. It's so beautiful, and of Jesus and Mary. And Jesus is pointing to his mother, and his mother is pointing her hand back to Jesus. And that's how that works. It's that family of love that wants to take care of us. Not who's boss or who's in charge, but that they both love us and they want to take care of us. And, of course, Jesus is God. But even in this picture, as there is in many Marian pictures, you have Mary and then Jesus is a small child. But it's kind of gives us that idea of it's not about power. It's not about control. It's really about love, mm-hmm. right?
Yes.
And that's what this relationship is about, you know, I think the reason why we're here. And it kind of is going to make a nice segue into our third book. Not that we're not going to talk more about Medjugorje, because we will. So in case you're just joining us, we're talking with Jane and Ellen Knuth. They're from the Kalamazoo Diocese, and you're listening to the Epiphany Radio Program. My name is Deacon Louis Zimlick, and they've got Thrift Store Saints, which came out in 2010, and Thrift Store Graces, which came out in 2012, 2 years ago. And the newest book, and the book that we're going to start talking a little bit about now, and then we'll also talk about some other stories that they've got too, especially the story of the tsunami that was in Japan with Ellen. But the third book is Love Will Steer Me True, and it has a little origami things on the front cover of it, and it's a beautiful little book. All the books are about the same size too. They look like they're pretty easy reads, about 200 pages. So we've talked to Jane. So Ellen, do you want to lead off with this?
Absolutely.
We'll have the daughter lead off with talking about this book.
So Love Will Steer Me True,
yes,
is the story of my early days working in Japan and how it necessarily changed my relationship with my mother. And I think anybody in their 20s can really identify with those moments when you're doing your best to become an adult and you're making these big life decisions that you're perhaps not completely sure of yourself, and they're definitely not what your mom envisioned for you when you were that perfect baby that she had in her arms. And so right. she gets rather alarmed when you say you're going to move to Japan, and then when you don't come home for 5 years, it gets a little bit tenser. And yeah. So along the way, our conversations got to the point where we really started to avoid topics completely, especially topics related to religion or spirituality. And this book is the story of how we started talking to each other again. And it's really a story about listening. And when my mother asked if I wanted to write a book with her, I was really up for it. And I think that caught her off guard. But in my mind, what I really wanted to do was write a book that people my age can give to their parents. Because I was overseas for a very long time, I got a lot of care packages. And they were slightly passive-aggressive care packages in that you would have, like, the peanut butter and the candy that you missed and some new socks. And then you'd have kind of the religious devotional book and a whole lot of holy cards and sure. quite a lot of saints medals to cover almost every situation.
Right.
And I never felt like I had a book that I could give back to my mom to say, hey, Mom, I'm not morally bankrupt. Like, I right. did listen to you. I know I'm living in a primarily Buddhist Shinto nation and that right. I'm not going to church every Sunday anymore. But I promise... Yeah. I promise that what you told me is still in here somewhere. And so that was my motivation for writing the book.
Okay, awesome. So it was kind of, and believe me, I have had this with my children too, you know. And we need to realize that our children are not our property. They belong to God. We all belong to God. And sometimes, overwhelmingly, and my kids will testify to this too, that I can be overwhelming about it too, you know. Are you going to Mass? Are you doing this? Are you doing that? And sometimes you make it worse by doing that, by hounding them. And instead of just praying for them and loving them. And then the question starts this. The question in my mind starts is, do I only love my children if they do the right thing? Do I only love my children if they go to church? Well, that's not love. That's rules and conditions. that I love you if fill in the blank. And that's the opposite of tough love, which is tough love for yourself, honesty for yourself. So I ask you, my brothers and sisters out there, those of you who are listening, listen closely to this conversation that we're having here today between this mother and daughter and deacon, that we have to be very careful with our children, and we have to be very careful with our parents, too. Children have to be careful with what we say to our parents, you know. I offhandedly said something to my father-in-law the other day, and I apologized about 15 seconds later, you know, because I could tell when I said that I hurt him. And so I apologized, you know. Sorry I said that. I didn't mean that like that. I was just kidding around, but shouldn't do that, see? So we got to be careful because we can't caveat everything by saying, I was just kidding, you know, after we know that we've made a mistake. If we've made a mistake, we need to say, I'm sorry. I love you. I care about you, and I'm sorry I said that to you. So tell us a little bit about your, and don't be shy about saying that you didn't go to Mass for a year or whatever. I don't know how long.
I already said it. Okay, yeah, it was
so
out
there.
You go.
So. But how all of this, so how does this transform into this book? And Jane, if you'd like to, add something in, and we'll go back and forth.
Yeah.
So Jane, any thoughts?
In a sense, this book is about healing. It's about healing relationships.
Awesome.
It's about healing, conversations. It's about, going back, stepping back and saying, I'm sorry. I haven't been listening. Tell me your story.
Yeah.
And that's the lesson, the big lesson I learned. It's not a how-to book. This is not, we're not saying this is how you do it. You know, this is not that kind of a book at all. This is stories. It's like, it's in the same pattern of the thrift store books. It's just stories. It's about what happened to us. This is what happened. And they're very real. There's nothing in there that you will expect. Sometimes it's very unexpected, the things that happen. And that's when you know God is appearing. There's a man named Daniel Taylor who said, the problem with apologetics is that it answers questions that no one is asking. And that's when I began to realize that Ellen wasn't asking the questions that I was trying to answer.
Okay.
And so I began to listen to find out what questions she was asking. And this book doesn't give all those answers, but this is the story of how I began to listen.
Okay.
And with that came a renewal of our relationship, and we could talk about God in very sticky situations. And I want Ellen to tell the story about how when the tsunami hit Japan and she was there and she called us, and how we did manage to get through that conversation, and how it can go very wrong.
Yeah. Now, would you say that this is so the tsunami, because I want to give our listeners a little bit of a picture. The book has not happened yet. The tsunami happens first, right? Are you starting to write the book before or after the tsunami?
This book was written entirely in the past year.
Okay.
And so all the stories that are being told happened between 2009 and 2012, 2013.
Okay, so before the tsunami.
After the tsunami.
Or after.
Before and after.
Okay.
So the book is showing me right out of college, going over there, getting ready to start my adult life, the kind of communication difficulties and everything that arises from that period in your life.
Okay.
And then in the middle, there just happens to be a tsunami that then we had to get through together on two sides of the ocean.
Okay.
And the book tells the whole tale, but I would like to...
So go ahead and tell your response to how what your mom just said.
So in a similar way to how I started my phone call with my parents, I was completely okay. The tsunami did not happen in the town that I was living in. I was not in epic or direct peril, but it was a huge disaster. And so even from the very moment that it happened, the whole nation was gripped in a very real and stressful sense of crisis. Everyone knew this was big. thousands of lives were lost in the course of a few minutes.
Now, this is the tsunami that affected the power plant over there?
Absolutely.
Okay, so that gives people an idea of how powerful this storm was.
Absolutely.
And earthquake. It was an earthquake. Of course, that's how tsunami starts. It was an earthquake and then the wave. Yes.
Right.
Go
so,
And the power plant was still steaming.
Yeah.
And they didn't really even know how bad that was.
And they still have a problem with that.
They still have a problem
with
it.
Yes.
Right.
Absolutely. So I had been at school. It was a Friday, and I was a junior high school teacher. And we had just watched all of this happen in real time on the TVs in the teacher's room. And there were a lot of emergency meetings trying to figure out, should we evacuate as well? Do we tell the kids? What do we do? And ultimately, our area was as safe as you could be on the island that day. And the workday ended, and I walked home to my apartment building. And I knew I was 13 hours ahead of Michigan time, where I was in Japan. And I knew that every morning my parents woke up to their radio clock that started playing NPR's News of the World.
Right.
And I was absolutely sure I knew what that first headline was going to be. And so I was determined to be the first bringer of bad news, because I didn't want them to have even a moment of panic or worry or pain in imagining what could possibly have happened to me. So I got back to my apartment and I logged on to Skype, which is an internet phone which allows you to make long distance calls for really cheap.
Right.
Very important tool for those living overseas.
Yes.
And when I logged online, I noticed one of my best friends who lived in another unaffected part of Japan was obviously doing the same thing. And so we started a call together just to kind of wait away the hours until we were going to call our parents. And we didn't say much. We kind of talked about, what are we going to do? How bad do you think this is? Do you really think the Fukushima nuclear power plant is going to get worse? Do we have to go home? Do we stay? It's a cyclone of questions that you can't answer and worries that you don't fully know how to express. And we really just mostly sat in silence and watched the televisions. We both had the televisions on to the same channel and we're watching the incoming reports. And both of us were waiting because we didn't want our parents to worry about us. We knew they were sleeping.
Right.
We knew they weren't worrying yet, but we wanted to make sure we could get to them first and head off that worry.
Yeah.
Because when you're trying very hard to become an adult, that's what you want. You want your parents to stop worrying about you.
And you're how old at this point?
I was 25.
Yeah, you're 25 years old. Okay.
Right.
Yeah. So you're not, you know, you're not 18.
No,
you're
no.
You're 25.
25. I've been living by myself for quite a while. And the time zone worked in my favor, so I made my call to my parents first and woke them up. I called them 5 in the morning, woke them up, and told them, I just want you to know I'm okay, but you have to know that something really bad has happened in Japan. So don't worry about me, but I need you to pray for Japan because there are a lot of people dead. There's probably going to be more. And then they turned on the TV and saw what was happening. And I think as anyone who's seen the news reports from that day know, just even the far images from the helicopters was just horrific.
Yes.
Giant waves of water just swallowing towns and cars and really hard to swallow. They were obviously worried. And despite all my best efforts, they were still very worried. But they agreed that I had to make the decision whether I was going to stay or go. And I promised to call them back later, and we were able to leave the conversation there. On the flip side, my friend, who had to wait another 2 hours to call her parents, when she ended up calling her mother and father, the worry that came from them was so overwhelming. And though she knew it came from a place of love, the worry and concern and just grief reaction was too much for her to handle. And she actually ended up hanging up on her mother.
Wow. Yeah.
Which was the last thing that she intended to do.
She's just overwhelmed.
Right. Yeah. And the last thing that I'm sure her mother wanted her to do. But this was a case of two 20-somethings trying very, very hard to be an adult in a situation that anyone of any age would have a hard time coping with.
Yes.
And having their good intentions not necessarily being interpreted correctly, and thus making the communication situation even more difficult.
You bet.
So in terms of how it played out for me, I did ultimately decide to stay in Japan, and my parents were wonderful in allowing me to do that. But in the days and weeks that followed, I started getting a lot of messages and emails and Facebook chats from not only my own friends, but from a lot of my parents' friends who, in a lot of instances, I think the intention was to express condolence and to kind of grieve together. But ultimately, the sympathy became much too much for me to handle. And I had to call my mom and tell her, tell these people to stop.
Yeah.
Tell them to stop emailing me. Tell them to stop telling me that they're worried or telling me that they're praying for me, because it is too much for me to hold.
So what do you think? That's quite fascinating, and we can try to unpack that a little bit. Jane, how did you feel about that? I mean, I think we can all get those feelings of being overwhelmed when people mean, you know, good intentions, you know, but what did you think about that?
Well, I understood
that
what she needed from me was peace. She didn't need my worries on top of her own.
Right.
She needed me to be the person that could somehow protect her from that.
Yeah.
Okay? We already had our plane tickets to go and visit her.
Oh, good.
And we were supposed to land 3 weeks after the tsunami. And at one point, we were trying to figure out if she could take those plane tickets and fly home. But eventually, she decided to stay. And so we went. We went 3 weeks after the tsunami. We landed in Tokyo. They had brownouts. There was no lights in the hallways of the hotels or the lobbies.
Wow.
There was
In Tokyo
because of the power problems.
Isn't that amazing?
They were still having daily aftershocks. And due to the nuclear crisis, it would eventually come out in reports that the government was only 5 hours away from evacuating the entire Tokyo metropolitan area. But luckily, it didn't come to that. But my parents flew into that time in Japan's crisis.
We were the only foreigners on the plane coming in, landing in Tokyo.
Yeah.
People were very kind to us because they were so surprised to see us there. Then we flew all the way over to the Tohoku region where Ellen lived, which that's not a tourist destination anyway, and to have these tourists show up in a way during this time of the country's crisis, they were so grateful to have us there.
Yeah.
So grateful that we would come and that Ellen had stayed. The fact that she stayed when a lot of the foreigners left gave their children courage, because it was hard for the children to see their teachers leaving the country.
Yeah, seeing everybody escaping, basically.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And so they were grateful for Ellen. One of the things that one of her supervising teachers, Ito Sensei, said to us was, Ellen has gained a lot of respect here because of the volunteer work she does.
Sure.
And I want you to know that. And I said, you couldn't have told us anything that would make us happier. So that kind of thing, that just the embrace that the Japanese people gave to us just because we showed up, just because we came.
Absolutely.
And then that helped us not to worry so much. I mean, the country was still in crisis. Nobody knew what was happening with the nuclear problem. But it was just good to hold her in our arms, to talk to her. We could see the stress in her life and the stress on her face and the stress all around her, but at least we got to see her.
Absolutely, you know? Absolutely.
So it was hard to leave her there that day, though, when we left.
I bet. While you're listening to Holy Family Radio, and this is Deacon Louis Zemlich with the Diocese of Kalamazoo, and we're talking with Jane and Ellen Knuth. Jane wrote Thrift Store Saints, Thrift Store Graces, which is another one of her books from a couple of years ago. And their newest book is from Jane and Ellen on love. It's the title of the book is Love Will Steer Me True. And it really, as it says here, it's a mother and daughter's conversations about life, love, and God. And I think another one of those things is listening.
Absolutely.
Right. So listening is, and I was listening to a priest the other day on Catholic radio, and what he was talking about is he was talking about listening and being a friend. That doing those two things before you talk about God, before you talk about if you've been to church, before you talk about if you've done this or done that, or do you want to become Catholic or, you know, any of these things to evangelize a person, to really learn how to become that person's friend, to listen to them. And I think that's a key thing with the Thrift Store Saints thing, too, and including this book. And as we grow up as parents, so this is a great conversation because as we grow up in, with as parents, and I'm a parent too, and I have a 22-year-old daughter, and I have a 26-year-old daughter, and I have a 30-year-old daughter, and I have two boys in there too. I've got a 24-year-old son and a 29-year-old son. Hopefully I got those all right, but they'll forgive me if I got them all wrong.
I'm
a little
sure they'll tell you.
That's right, exactly. So part of this book is learning how to, it's your snapshot, of course, of your lives, but our relationships change with our children. The relationships change. We always are their parents, but we're called not to lord over them. We're called to help them and support them and not boss them and you know, tell them that they're doing stuff wrong, especially when, as Ellen is saying, you know, I want to help my parents. I want to be there for my, you know, you're being there for your parents doing this preemptive thing and this disaster of I want them to hear from me first before they hear about it on the radio. And that's love. That's what love's all about, you know, doing something like that to try to alleviate their pain and panic, which they're going to experience, I guess, no matter what. But so on that deeper level, and we talked a little bit about this before the show, so let's go a little bit deeper on how included in the book, of course, for people to read. But if you guys could describe, especially this thing where the people are outpouring their sympathy to you, but it's not helping. They say they're praying for you. We're praying for you. We're praying. And it just seems like a heavier and heavier weight is upon you.
Right. I think, as I said before, even though logically I knew that these words and these reactions were coming from a place of good intentions and right. a place of love, their prayer became equated to their worry. And so when I asked my mom to pray for me, the way I described it was, if you have a really heavy ball and you cannot hold that ball any longer, you ask that person, hey, can you hold this ball for me?
Right.
And so you toss the ball to them. And then for them to take the ball and throw it back at you, you're saying, right. no, I asked you to pray for me yeah. and take this off of me. I didn't want you to give it back to me. This is heavy. I can't hold this. And so when you hear, I'm praying for you, I'm praying for you, and it really is more worry than an intention of actually
yeah.
relieving you of the burden, it can get very difficult to balance, wouldn't you say, Ma?
What words would you say would you think would be more comforting? I mean, can you think of, because the way I look at it sometimes, too, is, you know, people, you always say to people, you know, sometimes it's good to change the subject,
mm-hmm.
you know, to not talk about, to just listen to the person. So what would you like to talk, you know what I mean? You just open up to the person, you just say, well, what would you like to talk about? Instead of saying, you know, are they going to get the nuclear power plant fixed? Are they going to do this? Do you have a place to, you know, the panic even in people's voices.
Yeah. Well, you know, God is the great listener, right?
Amen.
We go to him and we pour it all out and then we feel better. But we really feel better when we then, after we've poured it all out, we sit still and we listen to him,
yeah.
right? And sometimes he doesn't say anything at all.
Yeah.
And that's okay. And I think that's what happened with Ellen, was that she poured it all out. I listened to her. I caught the big ball. But throwing it back at her is repeating it all again. And so I didn't do that. I mean, my husband taught me that. He says, Jane, worry and prayer aren't the same thing.
Yeah.
In fact, they're opposites. Don't worry back at her. She doesn't need that. And so we didn't. We just went. We listened. We listened. We listened. We listened. And when she told us things, we hugged her and we listened some more. But there is no way to unburden her by expressing our own burdens.
Right.
So that's the what I learned. I learned that as a mother of young children, you can say all you want and fuss over them and warn them and warn them and warn them. But when they're in their 20s, they don't need those warnings anymore. They hurt us. They know.
Right.
And if we keep warning them, that just is a burden.
Yeah. And I think sometimes it's good just to ask. To ask your you're our children, but they're, you know, what can I do for you? You know, and I'll say that to my kids, you know, what do you want me to do? What do you want me to say? Is that what you wanted to hear? Something like that? Do you think, Ellen, or?
Well, I think.
Get some advice for us parents, okay?
And again.
We need advice too, you know.
We do.
We need help too, believe me.
I can only speak for myself, but I think, especially in a crisis situation, the biggest gift that my parents could have given me was just to trust me and the decisions I was making for myself.
Right.
Because I needed their trust. I didn't need their worry. I didn't need them to second-guess me, because in a situation like that, it's hard not to second-guess yourself.
Yes.
And so the biggest gift that I was given was that when I made the decision that I was going to stay in Japan, they didn't question it. They just said, okay. And then they said, we're going to come visit you. I said, that's fine.
Yeah.
And they trusted me to make that decision for myself. And I think what's really important for someone my age is that we are absolutely on a journey to somewhere. And we already know where you guys want us to end up. You've taught us that, the church has taught us that since we were very, very little. But really, if we don't make the journey there, then we're not going to be able to take our heart along with us.
Right.
And some of the greatest doctors and saints in the church, their journeys were some of the longest, and their travels were some of the most inexplicable and the hardest.
Right.
And they needed those journeys to become the people that ultimately they were, and they did become very good people. And so for my parents to trust that I'm on my journey and to trust in the journey allowed me to understand their journey a little bit better.
Very good. Yeah, so, and that trust, I think, is partly really is the greatest type of love we can show to our kids, too.
Absolutely.
Right?
Yep.
I mean, and the listening aspect of it, to just say, you know what, tell me how you feel about this. Or really, you know, for parents just to say to their children, no matter how old our kids are, to say to them, you know, how am I treating you? Am I treating you like a child, or am I treating you like? I even said this to my son the other day. We were talking, and I said to him, I says, you know, we're more like brothers. God looks at us more like brothers. I mean, our ages are, we're not that far apart. You know, 25 years difference between my son Luke and I. And I said to him, I says, you know, and in the grand scheme of eternity. Right? We're just like a line. We're just like a line of people, and you're standing right behind your mom in line.
That's an interesting way to look at it.
You know?
Yeah.
That's how, and your grandmother, your mom is right at your grandma. Is your mom still around?
Yes.
Yeah, and your mom is standing right in front of you.
Yeah.
And we're on this journey together, and I think so often, we just start to think that, well, I'm older, I'm in charge. And I had somebody say that to me the other day. I had somebody say that to me the other day. This person happened to be 52 years old. And I was explaining to him, you know, that it's really important not to try to fix people, right?
Right. Well, and when we started this conversation, we started talking about arguably the biggest mother in the church, which is Mary. And
yes.
I went to St. Monica's Catholic Church and school, and St. Monica is another really good example of a mother who is on equal footing with her son, same level of sainthood, and she just prayed for a long, long time. And I'm named Ellen, so my name comes from the name Helen, Helena, and St. Helena was another very famous mom who is ultimately ordained by the Catholic Church for praying, and it really had a big effect on her son. They didn't become saints for worrying. They might have worried, but they became saints for praying, and then their children obviously had much more adventurous roads to gaining their own sainthood, but they're a product of their mothers letting them take that journey.
That's right. That's right. And really trust this trusting, you know, we're supposed to imitate God. We're supposed to imitate Jesus. We're supposed to imitate the saints, especially Our Lady. But what they do is trust, you know, your will, not mine, be done, right? Your will be done, God. And that's when the happiness flows through. And that's what God does with us. I mean, imagine, you know, a lot of people will say, why doesn't God just intervene? He trusts. He trusts. He trusts in us. He trusts in others that will help us. But it's about that journey, right? You know, it's about that journey. So we've got about 12 minutes left in the program. Is there anything else you guys want to touch on, or do you want to talk about this a little bit more, this particular subject on this, on your book, Love Will Steer Me True? This is their newest book. This is Jane and Ellen both wrote this book, and it's really great. It's a mother and daughter's conversations about life, love, and God. And I'm sure this one, it's got both their pictures on the back, and it says, call your mother. This is really great. In this time-tested cliche that warms and pokes fun at the heart of issues between parents and their grown children, call your mother because she wants to know what you're up to. She's interested in your life, and her most maternally instinct way, she is worried about you. And, you know, I'll tell you what, my wife worries so much about the kids, and I kind of feel almost amiss, but I tell her, I say, Annie, you know, they're great kids. They're great kids, and we've got to allow them to make choices they want to make. And my wife says the same thing back to me, you know, because where I start getting a little bit too, you know, she says, hey, back off.
I think a interesting thing to do at this point is to give Ellen the book and let her read the prologue.
Yeah.
The prologue is taking place when she's already in Japan, and she's trying her wings, and she's gonna go on a little pilgrimage.
Sure.
Wonderful. Go ahead.
The sign warns of falling rocks, steep inclines, and snakes. Just in case any of us preparing for the climb can't read the complicated Japanese, our guide, a middle-aged monk clothed in robes and sandals, explains it with descriptive gestures. A combination of circumstance, frantic life decision, and confused prayer has brought me to the foot of Mount Mitoku, a famous tourist destination in this region of Japan I now call home. An ancient temple perches so precariously on the side of the cliff face that legend says it was thrown there. This place is both a religious site and a great photo op, a must-see for any new arrival to Tottori Prefecture, a.k.a. me. I like a hike now and then. I also like Japanese historical sites. I'm even rather fond of nature. I enjoy none of these things enough to contend with falling rocks, near vertical inclines, and snakes. However, feeling the need to prove my newly claimed title of adult, I've once again jumped into a situation I'm not sure I'm ready for. Now, as I step forward, courage barely in place, the Japanese monk blocks me. He frowns and shakes his head, gesturing at the ground. These are no good. What? I peer down at my sneakers. What's not good? My shoes? I exchange a look with the young man behind me in line. What does he mean? He shrugs. Last year, they had a few tourists fall off the trail and die, so the monks have the final say in footwear. We both look at the guide. I think he wants you to change. But I don't have any other shoes, I explain. What can I... Another monk trots forward and thrusts something into my hands. Wait. My companion's eyebrows nearly disappear into his hairline. Oh, man, he gasps, majorly amused. Traditional grass sandals. Good luck climbing in those. I can't. Can I? No way. But it appears I can and will, because before I can blink, my shoes are gone, the monk-approved sandals are on, and I'm being handed a pair of rough gloves meant to protect my hands from the chains we will use to pull ourselves up the vertical parts of the mountain. Deep breaths. These sandals have surprisingly good grip, I tell myself as I clamber up the first tree trunk step. Maybe this won't be so bad. The leaves rustle to my right, and I turn my head in time to see a snake disappear into the underbrush. Oh, God. Is it possible to pray and blaspheme at the same time? And that's the prologue to Love Will Steer Me True.
That is wonderful. So it's almost like poetry, too, you know, some of it. It's really good. That's really good. So this is in bookstores everywhere. They can probably buy this on... Is this at the Catholic bookstore downtown?
It might be.
We might have to try to make sure they get a few copies of it. Yeah.
We're going to be at Schuller's on 28th Street on November 25th at 7 p.m.
Great.
Both of us will be there.
Awesome.
So we're looking forward to meeting all of our Grand Rapids people there.
Wonderful. So tell us again so this is going to be a book signing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to be where again?
Schuller's. Books and Music, okay. On 28th Street.
On 28th Street. And what time is that going to be? From
7 p.m. on November 25th.
Okay, so from 7 p.m. till closing, November 25th.
Yes.
Yeah, so I think they're probably open till like 9 o'clock or something like that. Are you both going to be there?
Yes, I'm driving over from Detroit for the event.
Awesome.
The book is available on Loyola Press's website. You can also order it off of Amazon or anywhere books are sold. If they don't have it in the store, they can absolutely order it for you. I will be at WMU's campus later this week on November 7th. Giving a talk to students of the Comparative Religion and Japanese Studies Department.
Wow, wonderful.
Thank you.
That's very exciting.
And we will be all over the area in the time to come. So.
That's great. Oh, wonderful. Any other things that you've got on your list there, Jane, that you'd like to go over? Anything about the books or about your ministry? Are you guys starting any ministry? Book ministry?
No.
No?
No.
Any plans for a fourth book?
No.
No? Oh, I can't believe it.
Though I will say
Alan probably does.
We write a monthly column together for the Good News newspaper that circulates in the Kalamazoo Grand Rapids area. And it's a mother-daughter adventure series called In Search of Superpowers.
Wonderful. Yeah.
So, and what is,
I have seen that before.
Yeah,
that's in the Diocese of Kalamazoo's newspaper, The Good News.
We're in that paper too.
Okay.
I have a column in The Good News, the Diocese of Kalamazoo, and that's about the St. Vincent de Paul Society.
Okay.
And then this other column is one Ellen and I write together, and it's a little free newspaper called Good News Paper, and it's given out in restaurants and barbershops and all over Southwest Michigan. And that one, In Search of Our Superpowers, is about finding the good that's all around us, finding the good people that are doing amazing things.
Amen.
And having fun doing it and our different views of it. Sometimes what I think is good, she doesn't think is so good. And what she thinks is wonderful, I'm like, whoa, this is strange. So that's what that column's about.
Awesome. And I think the even greater challenge is this. And I challenge as many people as I can with this. I don't need to challenge you guys with it because, well, I guess maybe I do. But the thing is that even though we search out for good people, you know, and we want to have good, positive people in our lives, it's up to us to set that example, right? So we have to be that person that good person that comes into somebody's life. And that can be pretty hard sometimes. We have to be that person who says we're sorry to our daughter, and a daughter who says sorry to mom, or the son and father. So you guys set a great example. Wonderful
Thank
example.
You.
Yeah.
Thank you.
And they both have beautiful smiles. You can tell they're mother and daughter. And it's really been great having you guys here. So we got another 4 minutes to go. Anything that you'd like to touch on, Ellen, that we haven't talked about, that your mom has touched on or hasn't touched on? Or
when we were writing the book, we had a chance to give it to a select number of pre-readers.
Great.
And being one of the younger authors that Loyola Press has published, and especially considering I wrote this book for 20-somethings, 30-somethings to give to their 50 or 60-something parents, I was quite nervous about how people the same age as me were going to react to it. So I picked two of my friends, and once they read it, I said, all right, what did you think? And one of them said, it makes me really want to talk to my mom because we can't talk like this yet. But knowing that you and your mom came from where I know you were to being able to have the conversations that are in this book, that makes me really want to try.
Yeah.
I was not expecting that from this particular person. She's the same girl who hung up on her mom after the tsunami.
Right.
So that was interesting for me to hear. And then the second was a young man who is really at a point where he's really struggling with his faith. And he read it, and I said, all right, what was your reaction? Just let me hear it. And he said, man, I'm so grateful for my mom. And I said, really? Why is that? And he goes, she doesn't worry nearly as much as yours does.
Well, at least that's his perception.
Absolutely.
You know.
Yeah. But in both cases, I was really heartened by the fact that it gave them both a much more positive look to kind of reattacking the communication problems that had been between them and their family. And I just really hope that if it just gives people something to laugh or cry about or something to identify with, that would be my ultimate goal in getting this book out there.
Awesome. And it really gives us a chance to reflect, right? I mean, that's what being a Christian is about. It's really about self-reflection, looking at yourself with the help of Jesus and saying, you know, how am I measuring up? Am I on the path? Am I really trying to do the things that Jesus wants me to do by loving my brothers and sisters, by loving my family members, by listening and not making my love a conditional love based on, you're doing all the things I want you to do. You know, you're the doctor I always wanted you to be. You're going to this university or you're working at this job, and not to conditionalize our children. You know, wouldn't you say, Jane?
Exactly. Yeah. We have wonderful children.
Yeah.
They are just a gift. And it's just, I'm sad when I hear people who were where Ellen and I were, where they can't talk to their kids about God, because God is the most interesting thing to talk about.
It really is. And allowing our children to have the thoughts they want to have. I mean, understand that, you know, none of us, I mean, I look at my faith when I was in my 20s, 25, at 30, you know, and I was all over the map, you know, and it's taken me a long time too, you know, different revelations you have in your life. I mean, these are the ups and downs of life, but really to be supportive. So I encourage you all to purchase this book. It's Love Will Steer Me True by Jane and Ellen Knuth. And also look for their other books. There are other books that they've written, which is Thrift Store Graces, as well as Thrift Store Saints. And meeting Jesus 25 cents at a time. I love that byline, and that's from the original book. So I encourage all of you to go out and get their book, and you can go out and get a book signed. November 25th, and that is at Schuler's in Grand Rapids on 28th Street. That's 7 p.m., I think, until closing. So you've been listening to the Epiphany Radio Program. Thank you for being with us, and God bless you. Thank you very much.
You have been listening to Epiphany with your host, Deacon Louis Zemlich, on Holy Family Radio. If you have suggestions or comments, you can email us at epiphany@holyfamilyradio.net. Also, if you would like to listen to this program again or share it with a friend, audio copies are available online at holyfamilyradio.net. Thank you for listening.